Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John on the other side of the glass, engineering and producing our program. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. Here we go. Monday, August the 7th, 2023. Coming up in January, we'll begin our 14th year with the radio program in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio on 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to this program live anywhere in the world if you've got the computer all fired up to buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. For our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Mondays, we kick off the week and our program with something we call the Monday One-on-One, presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, family-owned and run since 1985. Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, beautiful mirrors. We've got a couple of them in our home, art for your walls. Moe is a fantastic photographer and has his work displayed at the shop. Picture framing, that's where they really excel. And if you want Moe to come out and put up the work on the wall the way you want it, so you don't have to get up on the ladder, he'll do that too. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, right next to Copenhagen, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Well, Pima County and the City of Tucson have collaborated to create a homelessness task force, actually meets weekly. The city and county are also funding this multi-agency resource coordinator, and she is with us today. Maddie Vasquez is our one-on-one guest. She coordinates the homelessness protocol between Pima County and the City of Tucson. Maddie, thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me today.
So there's a new poll that was just released, and 78% of Arizonans think that homelessness is a big issue. Would you, well, obviously you'd agree with them.
Absolutely.
But do they seem to be onto something, these people?
I do think that it is a huge factor in our daily life and the life of the unsheltered in our community. It's a multifaceted issue that is needs to be addressed with a lot of collaboration. And so being part of the Regional Unsheltered Resource Coalition is something that I think is a great thing for Tucson and Pima County as a whole.
Well, I think you are ahead of the curve because Arizonans, according to this poll, and it's by the Cicero Institute, just came out. Perfect timing for your interview. Arizonans consider homelessness to be a multifaceted problem requiring long-term solutions that address mental illness and addiction. And that's part of what you're doing, right, with the protocols?
Yes, it is. So one big thing that we started working on right away was having a process behind how we deal with any type of unsheltered encampment. The biggest thing we saw was needing to have a why. Why do we leave some encampments and why do we move some others? So the very first thing that the homeless encampment protocol started looking at was, how do we make a tier system using an evaluation? So we, using one of the City of Tucson lieutenants, reached out to an ASU collaboration of workers, and they came up with an evaluation that we started using to give us the why for encampments. It looks at three areas. It looks at encampment impact to the surrounding community, mm-hmm. impact to the unsheltered individuals themselves, and impact to the environment. Depending on the scores for that, those encampments are given a tier level. So a tier one is just debris left over. There's really nobody there, which is mainly handled by our environmental services department. Tier two is people at the encampment, but that can govern themselves. They're actively working on getting housing services and getting outreach services with the people that are going out to offer those. And they're able to stay on a monitoring service with EGSD to collect any type of debris or trash. And then the tier threes are the ones that really can't govern themselves. There's an issue there that we really need to think about abating that tier.
Does that become a priority on three? I mean, that,
so yeah. Yes. So what will happen is a tier three will get help from enforcement. It'll get outreach first, but we do have the assistance from TPD to go out and put it on a 72-hour notice, letting them know that we will be abating it because of these reasons.
Right.
Again, offering services and then working towards the removal of that encampment.
Then, Madi, we come to the tier four situation.
So right now we only have three tiers.
Oh, you're
but,
only working with
yeah,
three.
Yeah, we're only working with three
but
so
the
far.
The system could...
It could grow.
Go.
Yes.
Let's hope it doesn't
it does.
Grow to
yes.
a tier
we,
four.
We, what we want to be able to do, too, is with the reports that are coming in, what we're seeing is a really high number of them are duplicate reports. So one person could report and then their neighbor could report as well. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to streamline that and making sure that people that are reporting understand that we do have that on our dashboard and we're getting to them. But the other section is what we call not an encampment. So people reporting panhandling, loitering, things like that, mm-hmm. which we also need to address.
Yes.
We started with the encampments, but that may turn into a tier four down the road mm-hmm. is how we start dealing with those.
So when you have a tier three, you said notice would be how many hours? Did you say 72?
So,
before
yes.
that folks had to kind of clean up the act? Or
So, yeah. yep, it'll be 72 hours, and mm-hmm. that gives them enough time to
get
to take
things,
whatever it is that they'd like to take with them. Sometimes it could take up to 2 weeks to clear it out. It doesn't normally take us that long. But so our time frame on that notice is 72 hours to 14 days.
Is this a hybrid Madi situation? Did you guys look at other cities, or how did the tier three system come into being?
So we did. We looked at a lot of other cities' approach to encampment protocol. But the one thing that we really wanted to keep paramount and in the forefront is we needed something that would work for Tucson. And, you know, we'll be the first to say it's not perfect.
Right.
But we are, you know, a fluid system, and we try to work with, you know, things that come our way. And right now, this is how we can approach looking at the encampments and doing it in a manner that is fair, we believe, to everyone around.
Madi, I think my friend Tim Steller at the Star kind of hit a home run with his column over the weekend, yesterday's paper. Just read a sentence from it. Tim wrote, "While there is broad agreement that homelessness and addiction are likely the top short-term issues facing the city, there are vastly different levels of tolerance and compassion among residents." I think he really hits the nail on the head there, because some people want immediate action, some think enough is not being done, and on it goes.
We do see from all spectrums of a response that people want us to have.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that prior to having this system, Tucson Police Department handled 100% of the
right.
encampment protocol. And
so
one
that's
of our,
less than their load.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We have them at about 70%. We've taken 70% of their work on encampment protocol off of their plate. So they still help us, and they're still a huge collaborator with what we do. But you know, Chief Kazmar always says, you know, try to get the right work in the right hands.
Sure.
And, you know, having people that are giving outreach and, you know, are able to provide services, TPD does a great job, but we can take some of that off their plate so they're able to get to some higher acuity calls.
Madi, getting back to that survey, which came out very timely for our interview, the about 8 out of 10 that were polled here perceive homelessness as an increasing problem. Is it increasing in Tucson? And I understand that's kind of hard to narrow that down, isn't it?
It is. Some numbers that we can use are from TPCH, the Tucson-Pima Collaboration to End Homelessness. They do a PIC count, so a point-in-time count, every January.
Kind of a census count of homeless people.
Yes. They'll take, so they look at both sheltered homelessness, which is considered people staying in some shelters or staying at someone's home, things like that, as well as on the streets, mm-hmm. you know, the unsheltered mm-hmm. Homelessness, if you will. And if we look at the last time it was done, which was 2020,
before
to now,
the pandemic. Or,
right,
yeah.
Yes, it was January right before the pandemic really hit. We see about a 3% increase. Going back a little bit of time, which they like to reference 2018, we have seen a higher spike. But what we're noticing is a higher transient population in the unsheltered that we're seeing here in Tucson. So we're really trying to work with our partner agencies, both internal and external stakeholders, to get some data on, you know, why people are coming to Tucson. What is it that could tip the scales for them to take services? Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it takes us quite a bit of touch points for people to engage sure. in what outreach can offer.
Okay, when we come back with Mati Vasquez, who is coordinating the homelessness protocols in the for the city and Tucson, we'll take a look at some of the ideas that are kicked around for the looking into the future, a 5-year plan, and what's being done right now to get some of the unsheltered population into temporary housing. As we continue with our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located right next to Copenhagen. Be right back with Mati. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Hi, Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show. I'm Bill Buckmaster. We're doing our Monday one-on-one presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. They're located at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. Mati Vasquez is with us, and Mati has an interesting role. She's really... her salary kind of half from the city of Tucson, half from Pima County, and she coordinates really looking at what are some ways to go with our homelessness issue, kind of homelessness protocols, if you will, between the county and city. We were talking about there seems to be, Mati, a slight increase from what we're able to tell in the unsheltered population. But looking more into the future with the version of your kind of your five-year plan, what are a couple of those objectives?
So one of the main ones is to increase access to critical services for our unsheltered population. One of the things that we see for shelter services is the need for them to have documentation. A lot of times they don't have the IDs or the birth certificates with them.
And how do you survive without ID?
Right. That's one of the things that we really work towards. You know, Housing and Community Development and Housing First has some grants that we work together with to get unsheltered into getting their documentation in order so that they can apply for some of the housing services that we have. Another one is, you know, making sure that we had a mobile shower. We borrowed one from Phoenix up from Salvation Army from them for a while.
Idea. A mobile shower.
And it was great. And it had, you know, a lot of people trying to come in and take advantage of that service. So then city used some grant monies to purchase their own. That's now in place. I believe it's three times a week, different places around town. And, you know, we're always looking for ways that we can find low barrier shelter options for people that are unhoused so that we can get them off the streets and starting towards a system to get them back.
And you all, and the city has purchased some hotels, old hotels, fixed them up, and I guess that's kind of considered what you call low barrier housing.
Yes, it's part of the Housing First.
Yeah.
It's actually really, really incredible. We did have a visit from the Housing and Urban Development Department last week, and I'm told that they were really, really impressed by all the things that the city and the county are doing. The Wildcat Shelter is definitely, if people have never been, it's definitely something that you should see. The way it's run and the services that they're able to offer is pretty incredible.
There are some people that choose this as a lifestyle. So how do you change that around?
Well, what we like to say, and we talk about this quite a bit in our meetings weekly, is, you know, the touch points are really, really critical. Many times people, the trust has eroded with the help that's being offered. And so we kind of think of it as, you know, planting a seed and constantly going back and watering it and, you know, showing that we are trustworthy and we do want to be able to help so that we can get people, you know, into services. So it's a constant touch point.
Unfortunately, the fentanyl issue is huge. It's cheap. It's widely available. So how are you and the team approaching that?
That's something that we are always discussing and making sure that we're aware of how it's affecting our community. When Chief Kazmar presents to mayor and council, that's often, his topic because it is widely available. It is having an impact on the unsheltered population.
How about getting services to these people? How do you determine who, first of all, the person has to be even aware, right?
Correct.
That there's a service available, and then you have to kind of match that person with the right service. How does all that work?
So what we do is when people report into the dashboard.
And we should probably talk about the dashboard, too, at some point, where people listening now can go if they've got an issue. But go
absolutely,
ahead.
Absolutely, yeah. Yes. Once you report, you can go on the City of Tucson website, and you can just hit encampment protocol, and it'll take you to a link where you can report if you see an encampment. The first service that any of those encampments gets is outreach and an evaluation done. And mm-hmm. that's how we talked mm-hmm. about it first, that you get that mm-hmm. tier evaluation. Mm-hmm. But outreach is going to be the first service that they get. So they let them know, hey, you know, we have these services available as far as shelter. Do you have a case manager? Can we get you in contact with a case manager? You know, food and water to try to get them, you know, if they need that mm-hmm. right away. And then from there, if it's a tier two and we're monitoring, they are seen every 2 weeks and they get back. And we also reach out to external stakeholders, you know, community organizations that can provide some services as well. That'll get to them in between those 2 weeks where our outreach services.
I think where we get lots of controversy is when should police intervene and who should get arrested. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of the touch points, right, that get very tricky.
And when it comes to enforcement, you know, I mean, as far as mm-hmm. I go, we leave that up to, you know, Tucson police. What we really do want to do is help them as much as we can, but understanding that there are rules that people need to follow. If there's any criminal activity, we strongly urge people to dial 911, you know, because we want the right work in the right hands. We want TPD to respond to those calls. But as far as encampment protocol goes, we can help with, you know, keeping some of that data as well and seeing if that tips the scales to moving it to a tier three.
All right, let's talk about the dashboard.
Okay.
What can you tell our listeners about it?
So what the dashboard does is it's manned by a great encampment coordinator. Her name is Elle Milliard, and she's amazing. So we get about 125 or so reports per day since October 27th.
Per day.
Now, 55% of those are duplicate reports, and 33% are usually not an encampment. So since October 27th, we've had 940 of those reports turn into encampment protocols. So it's either a tier one, two, or three.
I mean, somebody may just be calling in and say, I see what appears to be a homeless person pushing a shopping cart with all their worldly possessions, and that might merit a call, right?
Well, so that would turn into not an encampment for us because they're not really stationary with, you know, a temporary structure.
Yeah, yes.
But those are the ones that we still want to address, and those could turn into possibly a tier mm-hmm. four down the road, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, so what we're looking at now is 940 cases since October 27th of last year. 51% of those are tier one, so it's mainly just debris and trash left over. 16% of those are tier two. Again, those are the ones that people can remain while they're engaged in services and we're monitoring their encampment. And then 28% of those are tier threes that do have to be abated.
The Alamo Wash got all this publicity, almost became like the poster child for homelessness in our community. What's the latest on that area?
So for a while, it had been a tier two.
Okay.
That, you know, the people there were doing really well, bagging their trash, leaving it in a special location for ES to pick up. Unfortunately, we think, you know, other people moved
influences
in.
Came in.
Yeah. And you know, when you get more people.
Outside influence that didn't make things.
Right. And so it
better.
Does get reevaluated. And the last reevaluation did turn into a tier three. So that had to be abated. Mm-hmm. Again, everyone is offered services. you know, we can't force them to take it, but we can definitely offer as much as we can. So,
and I think it's pretty darn obvious if anyone has traveled throughout the West that this is not just a situation unique to Tucson, Arizona. I know we've traveled on the Oregon coast, and small cities have homeless people. It doesn't matter really where you are. Are you in touch with like other cities' homelessness people?
We do. We
coordinators, not homeless people, but necessarily.
we really do try to like work, you know, and reach out to people and see what it is that they're doing and see if it's something that would work for Tucson. We've also had different cities reach out to us and take a look at, you know, our tiered system as well and try to implement that in their communities. So we like to share and take what we can to see how we can make a difference.
So the dashboard, just go to the City of Tucson website.
You can go to City of Tucson website and type in encampment protocol and it should pop up.
I mean, even if you just Google City of Tucson homelessness, it's going to happen for you.
Mm-hmm. And it'll just say submit a report.
Okay. Madi Vasquez. Thank you very much, Madi. Very interesting. Coordinating the homeless protocol between Pima County and the City of Tucson. Okay, midway point on our Monday program on the Buckmaster Show. Our border report is coming up next. Keith Rosenblum will be on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? Well, not all news is good news. You know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We're watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. We love green things, especially this time of year, where we need to put some color in the garden and replace some of the hail-damaged plants. At least that's the way it was up at our house after two one-in-100-year weather events, all within about less than a two-week period. The plants, some of them just didn't make it, so it's a perfect time to head over to Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. It's a 13-acre site, everything you need for the garden, and then some, including beautiful pottery from Mexico, Talavera pottery, beautiful handcrafted items, and they're part of the business called Zocalo, Zocalo Village. So it's greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com, open daily in their 53rd year of business. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we bring in Keith Rosenblum, longtime border reporter, and he joins us now on our live line. Keith, how are you? How was your trip overseas to Asia and your first visit, I believe, to China?
It was. I'm actually now Keith Rosenblum, instead of being the longtime observer of Mexico, now Keith Rosenblum, the very short and superficial visitor to China. I changed my ID, and today we'll speak with the same pompous and bogus authoritative, like pretending that I do on Mexico. So I'm all yours.
Well, tell me about the trip.
I will say that this is the upside of local radio, that I can tell you about this trip because it involves every angle that could be local. And that's that Tom Tsang, T-S-A-N-G, is a buddy of mine from way back. Back when I worked with Jim Colby, Jim said, Tom's one of the smartest people you'll run into, Keith. And I have gotten to know him and part of the family through the years. Tom's a PhD from the University of Arizona and worked at the Cancer Center for years with three others who worked with him on what is called the Warburg method of treating cancer. It's an insulin-based methodology that uses the theory that you can arrest cancer by using insulin and by bringing down the body glucose level and then applying a very small amount of chemo, something like 10% of the amount that's used routinely, and by putting people basically into not a trance, but a low-level glucose. Anyway, this is a theory that won the Nobel Prize for a guy named Otto Warburg in 1931 and largely neglected, except for by Tom Tsang and his colleagues who said, let's not neglect this. And Tom is now on years and years of doing treatments in China. He splits his time between Tucson and China. And I had the pleasure of, for 3 weeks, shadowing Tom. And so I went from one clinic to the next, in cities that are three times the size of Phoenix. I can't remember their names. That's how big China is. I have all this stuff written down. But boy, did I. I interviewed a slew of people. I watched the process taking place. And what I saw was lots of people. Deliberately, Tom and the doctors in China, but certainly deliberately Tom, uses just the term palliative because you don't ever want to make more claims than what you can support. And so largely the treatment in Nogales, in Mexico, because he's doing the pilot project there, but on a much bigger scale in China, is used for people who are late stage cancer, people who have been told otherwise go to hospice or basically told you're not going to make it. And that has become his niche. And in the case of China, Tom enlisted the support of the called the Poverty Eradication Branch of the Chinese Communist Party. They said, what a great idea, let's give it a try. And they're very pleased with the results, and they're now moving it to other cities. So I was in, I was in Beijing, and I was in Shanghai. The treatments are not being done there, but I was also in a half dozen other cities where it is being done. Chongqing is one of them. And I met the docs, and I went into the clinics to watch, and it's very impressive. And so I'm thrilled to be a part of this. I wish I had, this makes me regret having run away from biology and immunobiology and science classes, both at Evanston High School as well as at Northwestern University. But it makes me glad that I can go to shadow someone like Tom and learn about what he's doing. Hopefully the application continues in China, which is not in the hands of the pharmaceutical industry, and can be implemented at some point in Mexico and perhaps even the United States.
All right, Keith, let me ask you, why is the Warburg, and I looked it up, and you're right, there's quite a history about the Warburg procedure. Why has the United States, the health authorities, been so reluctant to authorize it here?
Well, it's really not a question of authorization. It's more a question of pragmatism, because you don't really have to ask anybody for authorization to use a 100-year-old technique and a chemo drug that's out of patent. And because you're talking about, it'd be like, you know, we're talking about something that's not quite, I don't know, old as aspirin. What you don't want to do, though, is you don't want to run afoul of people. Tom's very guarded about what he says it will do. I'm the person that gets to see the effects, and so are families of people who have gone to do the treatment. So Tom's going to always be deliberately elliptical or guarded about what it can do. But I can tell you about, I can probably tell you about a dozen people that I know in the U.S. Who have done the treatments in Nogales, Mexico, and who have had fabulous results from it. I have no vested interest, by the way, in them. Everything's on a shoestring. But we don't have rules that say you can't do it. And there's plenty of Warburg-based, we'll call it insulin-based therapies that are offered worldwide. This particular therapy and the way that Tom goes about it is entirely different. So the protocols of administering the insulin and the way it's done. So, for example, in Nogales, Mexico, there's a doctor who watches it. Tom's not a medical doctor, so you always have to have somebody there to make sure everything's done properly. They've never lost with being killed or someone has died during treatment. That's never happened. You want to watch, and it actually is, the diabetics do it as well. I went for a couple. I drove to Irvine, California about a month ago for an elderly couple. Now the gentleman who had prostate cancer has been doing the treatment for a month in Nogales. They recommend 20 treatments of the insulin in Nogales, Mexico. They're living in Nogales, Arizona in the meantime. Anyway, it's made a huge difference in his life, and he's doing the treatment there. You could set up the clinic tomorrow in Tucson or elsewhere, but I think that in a society where everything is litigious, that the real care here is being exercised not to do something that calls attention to a treatment, because it has potential implications for oncology and the pharmaceutical industry that would be, we'll call it a crippling technology. I hate to use the term, it could be. So Tom is exploring from that standpoint. You don't want to ever run right head on into somebody whose interest you're going to threaten.
Yes.
So, but I want to be clear also that I'm not a medical person. So these are just things that Keith has witnessed. And if you believe Keith, who doesn't believe anybody other than that, you know, for covering the 30, you know me, you know that for 30 yeah. years I go to write stories on Mexico and in the U.S. and I won't be bludgeoned or seduced or threatened into any interpretation of something. I will ver para creer. I will see something to believe it myself. I can tell you that what Keith saw in 3 weeks in China is very compelling. I hope that Tom gets it, can expand it in Mexico. Will it ever be offered in the U.S.? I don't know. Maybe. But
All right.
Right now, you go where there's not opposition.
All right, Keith, stick around. I want to ask you about this New York Times report, The Rising Burden for Mexicans in the United States, a strong peso. We'll talk to Keith a little bit about that after we take a break on The Buckmaster Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We are also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations, they receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Have you always wanted to cruise to Alaska? If that's the case, then you'll only see the tip of the iceberg. At Bon Voyage Travel, we can package the full Alaska experience with a cruise tour. Journey to Denali National Park on glass-domed rail cars. Tour the tundra wilderness and see the northern lights with an expert guide. And of course, relax on your cruise as you enjoy the glaciers up close and personal. Go to bvtravel.com today. Bon Voyage Travel, your Alaska experts.
This is John Trout. Catch me every weekday morning at 5 before Wake Up Tucson with America in the Morning. Breaking news, weather, politics, and sports on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
Welcome back. It is The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Good time of year to do a getaway. Only about a three-hour drive to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start your planning by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Great advice on what to do, where to stay, and even some great places to eat as well over in Silver City in Grant County, where I guarantee it's going to be cooler. Usually about 10, maybe even 15 degrees cooler. We continue with our monthly conversation with Keith Rosenblum, our border reporter, the Mexican peso. Keith, having quite a run, actually, a sharp appreciation of the Mexican peso over the last year, a product of high interest rates and foreign investments in Mexico, among other factors. But this does have an impact on migrants who are working in the United States and sending a lot of their money that they earn back to Mexico.
It's a fascinating and a convoluted issue. And that's not a problem, actually. It's actually for a lot of Mexicans, it's quite beneficial. It's also a bummer for Keith, who goes to Nogales and is on his way there right now and has to pay for things in pesos, because it used to be I could buy a counter and it being 20 for the dollar, and now the same thing is costing me, what would that be, 15 or 20% more?
Because
Changed it at 16 and a half. So there's lots of upsides to it. It has made the Mexican peso, as they call it, called the super peso in Mexico, because it really is. It has maintained its stability. What business people like is a stable currency. Whatever it is, give me a stable currency. And so what Mexico has right now is a very stable currency that actually appreciates the dollar. And part of it is because President López Obrador hates all the international organizations. He hates whoever will loan you money, he'll say no thank you. So he's been super frugal on investments. What he has invested in, we're talking about public infrastructure, the Mayan train, which hopefully you get to take sometime. So there's 1,500 kilometers of new rail lines in the south and in Quintana Roo, Veracruz, Campeche, which is going to be fabulous whenever it's done. It's running over cost, but oh well. And some port infrastructure and some highway infrastructure, but it's actually been a lot less than usual, and it's been very balanced. And so he hasn't been spending money, even though he's offered. He declines to. Unusual for a guy in his position, but he's a frugal leftist. And if you're in the maquila business, if you're in all of a sudden, you're the things that you're purchasing, your labor has gone up, with the dollar. So you're looking at a cost of living that's higher. But on the other hand, for Mexicans, their purchasing power, they can go over to the Walmart now in Nogales or to any of the stores in Nogales, Arizona, and get a lot more for their peso than they did previously. What you're alluding to, which is people sending pesos back to Mexico, I don't know which way it cuts, really. I guess if you're going to send $500 back and the people that you're sending it to are drawing 16 and a half or 17 pesos to the dollar, and then they go out and spend things, they're actually, their purchasing power is declining, right?
Yeah, yes.
Nogales. So
yes.
I see a whole bunch of different angles to it. What I can say about it is that it was certainly unexpected. If you read the Mexican press prior to López Obrador coming into office, you would have seen people predicting the peso at 22, 25, 30 to the dollar. And by the way, one of the very cool ways to know, I think it's still done this way, if you want to know what the peso is worth today and what it's going to be worth a year from now or 18 months from now, you used to go, and I think you still do. I haven't done my homework that you've assigned me to from last time, because I was in China. I have an alibi. But you can go to the Chicago Board of Futures, and you can actually buy futures. Same way you can buy hog belly futures, or you could copper futures, things to protect your income. You buy future. Well, you could buy future pesos too. So that way, if you made a huge investment in dollars and you want to protect yourself to make sure that you no different than buying futures on the stock market, you're going to pay X amount for the right to buy peso maybe at 18 to the dollar or 16 to the dollar, whatever. It's no different than the regular futures industry. And so you can buy the peso. I don't know what it is for the 18 months ahead of time, but it's a way to know what the markets are thinking and what it's going to cost you if you're Microsoft or you're Apple or you're a huge company and you want to hedge your bet to make sure you get those profits, and you give up maybe every dollar to make sure you're getting your profits and you don't get nailed by a devaluation or by a currency appreciation. You give up maybe a fraction of a percent in order to guarantee that the exchange rate.
Mexico, Keith, is the second largest receiver of second largest receiver of folks sending money back behind India. So, I mean, this is huge.
It is. Lots of Mexicans, many of whom I know, I think they're like 15 million or something. And, if you come to the U.S., you make a good wage, and so you send the homies back. Well, you do it both. You send money back to wife, mom and dad, children, grandchildren, everybody else. And you also do it for yourself, because once again, Mexicans are not coming up here. When they come to work, they come to work. They're not looking to live in Sun City afterwards. They're looking to make, and thank God for that. That's the last thing, either Sun City needs or the Mexicans need. That's a very good thing not to happen.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're doing both. You're investing in a great deal. You know, let me bring up for I think the 9,000th time. Mexico has 7,000 miles of coast. That's
wow.
A lot of coast. Yeah,
wow.
That's a lot. So you can still live on the coast, as a lot of Americans like to do, or a lot of people like to live on the coast. And so 7,000 miles gives you lots of options, like more options than, and plus a lot of those 7,000 miles are really temperate. They're nice places to live. You
mm-hmm.
can swim.
Yeah.
You can fish. You can do things. So anyway, that makes sending money back to buy things, you know, buy real estate, buy the land for your next home. And for people who, because, you know, U.S. economy is a buoyant one. So I know these people, I run into these people all the time because I run into them at Western Union or I run into them at MoneyGram, sending money back. And it's a very sophisticated industry. Hey, you want to send back $200 and the rate's going to be, you know, 16.8. Hell, you're going to send back more than 500 or 1,000 or 2,000 or whatever through a bank rate. Then you pay a little bit up front and then you get a better rate. It's really interesting. It's a very sophisticated market for sending money back. And the word you were looking for before was remittances. That's what they are.
Yes.
And it's a huge. I want to say, I think I'll just say it, that the remittances are behind tourism and oil revenues. And they might actually be ahead of a vast source of income for Mexico itself. And for the Mexicans, it's fabulous because it doesn't involve any. It doesn't involve any labor, right? There's no. It becomes part of their GDP without them doing anything because they're getting all this money from foreigners. And by the way, it ain't just the U.S., Bill. It's Europe and it's Canada and it's where I just was, China. There's people working, Mexicans all over. They have the biggest diaspora of any people.
Yeah. Hey, Keith. Before we go, a quick couple of comments. About your travel to China. I'm just curious about the whole process. Some of your thoughts. I've got about 2 minutes for that, please.
I will say this. First time there, no expectations, don't know what to expect. I will say this. No uniform police presence anywhere. Stunning. On the road, nobody speeding. Remarkable. Nobody vying for very order. Everything in Mexico, everything in China is about teamwork. No one talks about God. There is no discussion of God anywhere, anytime. There's no discussion of religion at all. It's fascinating. There's really no discussion of politics. Politics is left to the people at the Politburo, wherever it's called, to Xi Jinping and the party. And so these conversations I had were largely free of 90% of the issues that you have here. No one talks about abortion. All the big issues of the day here, states' rights, individual rights, they're like, what were you talking about? No one talks about sports. So that part was just fascinating. It was very liberating in lots of ways. The fact that nobody's carrying a gun is fascinating to me. No one. The fact that I got children here. I always think, is there going to be something in a school? Is there going to be something in public? Is there going to be something on the highway? So there were a lot of things. I think that I had a million discussions while I was there, and it was fabulous. And the things that I will say is that it is extraordinary. It is extraordinary to see the prosperity of the people. Are there Faustian pacts that go on? Say, okay, you cede some of your liberties to the government in exchange. We'll make sure you have a really prosperous lifestyle. That, to me, is what's happening. And I don't see many Chinese who are looking to immigrate here. You come across them, you know, come across people. I found people very curious. By the way, I found people warm as can be at every turn. Doctors, the nurses I ran into, no beggars, Bill. There were no beggars. I had no one was coming up and washing my windshield. There were no street people anywhere.
Oh, geez.
I didn't come away. I mean, the things that one is struck by, sometimes it's the absence of things and sometimes it's the presence of things. But in this case, I'm calling my kids and saying from China, by the way, I could get T-Mobile roaming for very close to free. I could use all the Wi-Fi things free, and I use a VPN so that I could duck the Chinese restrictions on. Oh, well, we got to go. Anyway, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Fascinating.
Glad you had a great trip. Keith Rosenblum, on behalf of Mr. Rosenblum and John Engineering and producing our program, Bill Buckmaster, wishing everybody well. Take care.